This is Ouija Boards and Midnight Marks, where a spirit board conversation sparked our spiritual evolution. I'm Shale.
And I'm Cheyenne. And each week, we explore a world where there is much more than meets the eye. So pour yourself a drink and join us as we cheers to a witchin' good time.
All right, welcome back, our little coven. We are joining you again in the new year. I'm excited to be starting this new year, getting halfway through season four, all of the lovely things. I hope you all had a wonderful holiday, if you celebrate, all of the things. And we are deeply into the thick of winter now here in the Northern Hemisphere anyway, other than those Southern Hemisphere summer babies. I'm jealous of wherever you are on a beach somewhere. And tonight's episode's a little bit different. So unfortunately, my esteemed and lovely co-host could not join us tonight, but we are charging ahead and I come with good news in that we're bringing back one of your season three favorites, Hannah Haddadi. So Hannah, welcome back. We're so excited to have you, our favorite little death witch and our favorite little medium. So tell me, how have you been? What are you drinking? What are all the things?
Thank you so much for having me back. I'm so excited to be here. Oh gosh, things have been pretty good. 2022 was a lot. Personally, I finished up a really long death and rebirth cycle, and that was pretty amazing and challenging and joyful and all the things. So, excited about new life.
Yes.
Finishing that up. And tonight I'm drinking a tea that has a lot of herbs that kind of help to move and like clear the system, which I find they also do that emotionally as well. So I've got some nettle, it's got burdock in there, some dandelion,
nourishing.
Yeah, it's got some red clover, like some lemon verbena. So
That sounds so yummy.
Yeah, so good.
I am also drinking a tea. And for folks listening, Hannah is somebody that I also work with really deeply for spiritual coaching sessions. And one of the things that we were talking about that kind of aligns with the theme of the new year is kind of getting back to the basics. And for a lot of folks, I know that I'm not alone in this, Hannah's not alone in this, but like the beginning of the year when we're kind of in the thick of winter is also that time of really turning inward. But also can be that time where after like the chaos of the holidays and whatnot, we might be feeling very spiritually disconnected. And so Hannah and I were kind of talking through that yesterday. And so we talked about how sometimes to get back from a spiritual slump, you just need to go back to your foundation a little bit and like remind yourself of those small practices. And so one of the things that kind of came up as we were talking is I was like, man, I haven't done like a good nourishing herbal infusion since like November. And I was really missing that. So I also am seeking out the nourishing herbs tonight. And I have one that's a little bit kind of aligned with our cycle. And so it's got also some chickweed and red clover as well. I'm a huge fan of red clover, some rose, lemon balm in here, and some dear sweet lady's mantle. She is like my absolute ally. Love her so much. So yeah, all of the things to move some stagnant energy and all of that as well. So it's kind of cool to see that we're aligned that way tonight.
I love that. Lady's mantle is so nice too. Your tea looks, yes, so sweet. Such a like soul opener.
Yes.
I feel like, yeah, mm-hmm. It's like if you have any type of, I feel like, void, Lady's mantle just gets right in there for you.
Yeah. And I've just like, I feel like she's a really strong ally for me in a lot of ways, but I've especially been feeling her in this like spiritual slump that I'm feeling. where I just feel her calling out, like, you need to like work with me in like simple forms and stuff like that. So it's really interesting that you're describing her as that soul opener, because I think that's exactly what she's like calling for right now.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
And also, like, if you see Lady's Mantle, for folks who have like not seen it physically as a plant, she's this really cute, like almost like a cup. And she holds like sacred dew from the morning and stuff like that. And she's got this really cool like diamond effect in the way that she holds the water. And so just thinking of her holding you and holding that space and that sacredness too is really, really special. I could go on about Lady's Mantle forever.
I'm like, are we just going to talk about Lady's Mantle?
We totally could. Awesome. So we will go ahead and draw a card, which is normally Cheyenne's esteemed job, but because she's not here, we're going to draw from the Spirit of the Herbs deck. So as y'all remember from season 3, Hannah and I are both herbalists. We love herbs in our practice too. So it only feels fitting. So we will see who is jumping out tonight. All right. We have drawn the 8 of Cups. And we've also drawn, so this deck always accompanies an herb as well. And the herb is not one I'm familiar with. Maybe you are, Hannah, but it's called gravel root.
A little bit. I don't use gravel root a lot personally, but we are slight acquaintances.
Okay. So what have you used them for in the past, if at all?
You know, I personally haven't used it for myself. It's one that I like when I would work in the apothecary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's not really one that I would, just, what am I trying to say? Like off the floor. It's not one that I would just give someone. So, yeah, that's why like, we only know each other a little bit, but
yeah, I'm curious where it grows or anything like that? I've honestly like never heard of it before.
I don't, unfortunately.
Well, I guess we'll have to do some research after this episode. So it says the 8 of Cups, a person is embarking on a journey into the night. The moment has come when one realizes that further progress can take place only after the lessons have been carried deep into the mysterious night of the subconscious. I'm already getting winter themes. Mm-hmm. Such moments can appear to be a retreat or escape, though on closer examination, they're a way to coalesce one's powers. The card is under the influence of the waxing moon, which are we? I think we're in a waxing moon as we speak, aren't we? Or is it new moon?
So like, speaking of being off my, your like,
spirit. Yes, I feel like so unaligned with the moon lately, which breaks my heart. but it says, the card is under the influence of the waxing moon, signifying growth and expansion. Do not be afraid to leave old emotional baggage behind, but realize the perfection in the lessons learned. New shores await you. And then it says the spiritual properties of gravel root. So gravel root helps to loosen up solidified emotions and feelings and allows them to be free flowing and fluid. A sense of relief will be felt as this begins to occur. I don't know, Hannah, but I feel called out.
Yeah, a little bit.
We're all like, we don't know who gravel root is. Gravel's root, it's like, you need me right now.
Also, just to clarify, we are in a waxing period right now. Yes, you are correct.
Oh my gosh, look at all the synchronicities going on. I just gives me chills. Amazing. So why we wanted to bring Hannah back is, first of all, you all loved her. She was our most listened to episode back in the year of 2022, which is freaking phenomenal that you all love Hannah as much as I do. And so I think something that's really interesting when people are talking about things like spirituality and their kind of journey is like this kind of unconscious understanding of a death and rebirth cycle. But people may not be able to necessarily articulate that or be able to understand like what that is. And you have this really beautiful relationship and kind of live your life around these types of cycles. And so we kind of touched on it a little bit in the sacred death episode, but I thought it would be really great to really dive into that concept more fully. And then also kind of talk about this time of year in the depth of winter, where a lot of folks are feeling that call to turn inward, but because of kind of the society that we live in, maybe don't feel like they're able to quite align with that energy and how we might be able to navigate that. So that being said, you've said that you went through a pretty significant death and rebirth cycle in this last year. So I think we can start with, what is a death and rebirth cycle? How do they show up? And what does it feel like to kind of move through those kinds of things?
These are really good questions. I would say to begin with, I mean, a death and rebirth cycle can be really anything. The individual can feel like they are going through a death and rebirth through many different life events, experiences. So in that way, I believe a death and rebirth is really broad, where whatever you feel like a death and rebirth is happening in is valid. I think a death and rebirth process is something that we go through daily, monthly, yearly, and then in these like more grander scales of, you know, what we would call maybe like a decade, or, you know, people say your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, these are all death and rebirth cycles in a way. So I think that there are a lot of things that can be a death and rebirth cycle, and there's varying amounts of time. The things that I look for when I'm wondering, is this a death and rebirth cycle happening? If I were to categorize the cycle into stages, from what I've personally experienced, first, before the death, there is the beginning of an uncomfortableness usually. And it's in this period that I believe people actually get the most signs about the change that needs to happen. Oftentimes our bodies are telling us, right? Our moods are telling us, our actions, the way that we are interacting with the world and ourselves is saying something is off, or something doesn't serve us anymore, and it's probably time for some things to shift. The time before the death is usually when there's the most push and pull in my own experience, and watching other people go through their cycles. And then the death comes, and I find that there's a decision to be made. Are you going to make the decision that you need to usher this death and rebirth cycle, to give it the okay? You know, you're like, okay, I'm flipping the switch, here we go. Or are you not going to decide that right now is the moment to say yes to your death and rebirth cycle, but with a caveat of what are the consequences to that? And consequences doesn't have to mean something bad, but every choice, quote unquote, has a consequence, or it has a further action.
Mm-hmm.
So
do you feel like if you were to say no, I don't know if you've had experience saying no to a death or rebirth cycle, but do you feel like it's almost putting off the inevitable, or do you feel like it could be one of those changes where it's like more of like a pivotal moment and it changes your path forward?
Personally, I think that you're just putting off the inevitable in my own experience. This is where we might think of cards like the tarot, like the tower card in the tarot, and that you've been putting it off. And then eventually your spiritual team is like, okay, we have to do something here.
Yeah.
the decision has to be made, and we've given you chances and you haven't done it. And so thus we throw you out of the tower.
Spiritual team can be a little rough sometimes.
Like, a little bit.
Not getting it. Out on the plank you go.
Yes. But that's my own opinion. I think that the death and rebirth cycle is going to happen anyway. And the longer you put it off, the more you suffer.
Mm.
And that's usually when, I mean, I've watched this for myself. I've watched it for other people happen. And, you know, unfortunately, you are watching the person that you know, or you can look back and see that you were going through the same thing. But things just get even more uncomfortable and they get more rough. And we might get to a point where we have sort of like a blow up where a really quick decision has to be made that we don't feel prepared for, but we could have felt prepared for, right? Or there might feel like there's a blow up because it's so uncomfortable. And then things get kind of, you know, violent, or, you know, you do things you didn't mean to, you say things you didn't mean to. So, I find like the death part, right, is like, are we making the choice? Are we going to put it off? If we put it off, you know, you're going to have to make the choice eventually.
Yeah.
So, and then I think the next part is like this limbo-y area, between the death and the rebirth. And I find this part to be where the most work is happening. Right, you're learning your quote unquote lessons, you're gathering tools in your toolkit, you're probably having to make more changes, you're really going along the path at this point, right? And then the rebirth comes, and I personally find the rebirth to be the hardest part, because now you're being asked to implement all of the lessons and the tools and everything that you gathered into what is next, or what you desire to be next. So if a huge death and rebirth cycle is about, say, a new life,
yeah,
this is what has been happening for me. Now it's time to go out into the world, to be seen, to go try the things that I've been learning, you know? And I think that's the scariest part for a lot of people, because sometimes the limbo-y part, or the part where we do a lot of work, can be kind of like a cocoon.
Yeah. And it can get
really comfy in there. And the rebirth, similar to, you know, anything that goes into a cocoon and comes out with wings, it's like uncomfortable and
gooey,
yeah, sticky, and you know, it's painful, like a snake, they're shedding. So the rebirth, I find, is the hardest part, and honestly, I think it takes more courage to do the rebirth than it does really the death part.
Yeah, there's like a couple of interesting thoughts that are kind of swirling in my head as you're talking. So first and foremost, like when you think about the rebirth, probably what's also scary with that is that there's an element of the unknown, right? But the same kind of thing can also happen with death, right? Like we don't truly know everything when it comes to death. But I'm also curious if you kind of define a death and rebirth cycle as something that is like almost kind of finite, like it's an ending of a chapter, or if there is more of like a fluidity to it, as you're going through these cycles and moving from one into the next. So yeah, I'm curious your thoughts on that.
I think it can be either.
Yeah.
And I say that because as you're asking those questions, I think about the cycles that I've been wrapping up, and there have been many cycles happening at the same time. So for instance, I wrapped up a 10-year cycle, and that was more fluid, right? Mm. 10 years is a long time, and I changed a lot, and, you know, I worked different jobs. I, you know, finished school. I did all these like really big, these things that were really big for me, and different ways of showing up. And that feels more fluid because there's so much growth there. And there's also death and rebirth happening in this larger cycle, right?
Yeah.
These sort of finite things that you're talking about, I feel like sort of happened within that cycle. But then there are other cycles that have been finite and they needed to be. For instance, a really terrible relationship. You know, it's like that needed to be finite. And then I needed that to close so that I could start to heal from it.
Yeah.
Right. So I think they can be both. And it might depend on how long the cycle is.
Sure. You know,
I had a 10-year I just finished up. And then I feel like this last year was a cycle on its own. And then there's another like 3-year one that's been lingering.
It's interesting because like thinking about like it's almost like some cycles kind of hang out like spirits, right? Like they're kind of like with you in this like space you're in. And it's almost like sending them to the light, right? Or like helping them move through that portal into the whatever is next. And so it's kind of fun to think about like these little like ghost cycles.
I love that. And I am gonna forever view my death and rebirth cycle as like cute spirits hanging around.
That helps, right? Then they're not like doom and gloom destructive.
Yes. That's
like another thought that's kind of circling in my mind too is, and we kind of touched on this in season 3 when you were on, but like the whole concept of fear around death. And I'm curious, like, have you seen kind of like a mix of reactions in like folks that you've worked with? And when we talk about things like death and rebirth and like just using terms like that, is there like a bristling that happens? Or like how do you kind of coach people through stuff like that when we have such like strong connotations with language to describe something that is very significant, happens multiple times throughout our life?
Mm-hmm. 100%. I'm like giggling a little bit to myself because there has been for many folks, even just saying death and rebirth, the word death is in there and it's first. And there's already like I can see people get a little tight, you know, or they hold their breath a little bit or they back up a little bit. And it can be a little bit tough sometimes for me to remember that not everyone feels the way that I do about death.
Yeah, like you're so comfortable talking about these kinds of things.
You know, I've learned to really give people space for whatever their experience is. There's no need to push anyone to get comfortable. Right. It's like by force, like that's never the way that things, expand and change and grow into cool new things. I have continued though to keep my verbiage. This is something that I kind of started to play around with. And I recently finished up a death doula program, and they talk about this in that as well. If someone is talking to you and they're having a really hard time using sort of like truth words of like what the circumstance really is or what has happened.
Oh, like using like euphemisms or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's not my job to have them change their verbiage necessarily, but it doesn't mean that I should change my verbiage. Instead, it might be helpful. Yeah, instead it might be helpful to ask the person, do you have a hard time saying these words? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And just giving space to that has been something that I've kind of had to work on because I do feel so comfortable. That's been like a great lesson for me and great practice. But it has been interesting not to change the way that I talk about it because I don't think that's going to be helpful in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so interesting to think about too. And like almost by there's almost like an empowerment, right? That comes with you holding on to the language and the truth words so that they're spoken into existence, that helps kind of soften them almost. So there's like this kind of interesting dynamic of the power that comes with that, but also the compassion and the softening that helps to move them through it by you choosing those words.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Cause that's really my job, right? Mm-hmm. Is to hold space for how the person is feeling and to also hold space for what has really happened, even if we're not ready to talk about that yet.
Yeah.
It would be a disservice for me to shy away from it, because that's not what people are actually coming to me for.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to kind of talk about winter, since we are recording this in the thick of winter, as we kind of turn into this new cycle. And, you know, when we think back on the way that a lot of our ancestors lived, when they lived in communion with the land and with the cycles of nature, and didn't have obnoxious, we were talking about this yesterday too, but obnoxious like overhead lights that keep us awake when we're in the dark half of the year. You know, this time is really one of those where we're really called to look inward, to rest, to take a break and just kind of be. But we of course live in a society that thrives on things like productivity and pushing through even when everything's telling us not to, right? Mm-hmm. And really what's so interesting too is that this is a real time of death and rebirth, right? Where we're sinking really into the death half of the year, so that we can be reborn again in the spring. And so I'm curious what kind of things are coming up for you in your practice right now, whether that's through your death work or through your spiritual practice, or even your practice as a medium. Like, what are those kinds of things that are coming up in the winter? And like, how are you kind of moving through all of that?
Mm-hmm. You and I did talk about this yesterday. And the biggest thing that comes to mind when you ask the question is similar to what we talked about, how personally I really need to be in the darkness, especially around this time of year. Those lights, they feel so bright and they feel...
No, you just want to hiss at them. You're like...
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and so being in the dark more feels more nourishing around this time of year for me. I really don't like winter. I'm not a snow person, and I'm not a cold weather person, but I'm here and it's going to get darker earlier anyway. And I feel like it's more beneficial for me to go with the flow of what is happening outside rather than fight it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is what happens when you and I were talking about the holiday season. You know, from the end of October, maybe the beginning of October to the end of December, people are really stressed out.
Yeah, it's so chaotic.
Right? It's so chaotic. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of pressure on finances and showing up in ways that can be really tough for people. And there's just a lot being asked of everyone.
I've thought about that. Like, why the ever living H do we like... Why do we have like four holidays back to back to back? Like, who thought of that? It's just like obnoxious. Like, could we not? And then we have like, you know, Christmas ends, we do New Year's, and then it's like this huge break again, or this huge period of time before any of us get a break again. And then we're like so burnt out by the time summer happens, right? Like, I just don't understand who approved this process.
Yeah, I think it's not the way, but. Yeah, I feel like it's really destructive to our spirits, mm-hmm. like the chaoticness of winter in the material capitalism type of way. I think it can be a really big ask to say to people, you need to slow down and you need to commune, you know, with the season and how it's going on. I think it can feel like a really big ask because there's so much.
Yeah.
And what it might really take is a collective shift of the way that we live out the later half of the year. Some of my clients and I have been talking about re-examining their holiday traditions and the things that they partake in, and figuring out what they can let go of and how do they want to recreate in a way that's going to be more nourishing for them, for their families, for their boundaries. So I think starting there is a really great point. You know, that's been really helpful for me. Like you asked about this time for me spiritually, and my family and I, we do a buy nothing Yule and buy nothing holiday. And we've been doing Yeah, we've been doing that for a really long time. And I know it's not possible for everyone. It's been a game changer for us though. You know, we just pitch in for some nice food and we just kind of chill out and there's not a lot of pressure. And that was like a really big deal for us to decide to change the way that we had been doing holidays. And it was really kind of revolutionary,
honestly, yeah,
for us, and you know, trying to recoup during this time. So that's what I've been doing, is just re-examining the things that I do during the winter that aren't really helpful for myself or maybe other people, and trying to figure out how to make it more sustainable.
Yeah. And I love what you said about like needing to be in the darkness. And that's something that I think is such an incredible theme that happens in the winter. Cause I'm the same way. Like I was anti-winter, like to the maximum. I hate cold weather, but in the last few years, especially since starting to really deepen into my spiritual practice and like my herbal practice and wanting to live kind of more in alignment with nature to the degree that I can, right? Because as you said, like, it's not realistic to think that we can truly live the way that our ancestors did and really be in true alignment with the seasons. But I think that's what was kind of the game changer for me, was this idea of getting comfortable with the dark. And it kind of feeds into this bigger conversation of being uncomfortable with things like death, because it's unknown. And somewhere throughout history, even though we used to have like this really beautiful relationship with things like death, and it wasn't something that was feared, it was something that was sacred, right? Which is another term that you use that I just love, which is sacred death. But you know, somewhere along the way, we became afraid of the dark too, and like what is symbolized in that, and made it something that's like this big, scary, like we don't know what could happen to us, and the dark is dangerous, and anything that is of darkness is, you know, something negative or something to be feared. But you know, some of the most powerful characters that you see in like folk stories, or you know, when you look back, are aligned with things like darkness, but they have this like really interesting air of like mystery around them, but in a way that like draws you in, but doesn't make you like fear them. It's almost like a respect of what is unknown and what's mysterious, versus being like, oh, I don't know what that thing is, and so I fear it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. As you're talking about that, all I can think of is children's stories and how there's always like a boogeyman or something under the bed, but it comes out when the lights go off. And you know, that's just like one tiny percentage of, you know, the way that we talk about the dark, and especially if you start people at a young age being afraid of it for multiple reasons. You know, when you talk about the dark and the fear there and it being related to death, I also think about how many, many cultures across the board, when you look back kind of in the quote unquote olden days, they believed that when you die, you go through a journey through the underworld.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you had to go through the journey to get to wherever was next. You know, for some, you go to the underworld, that's the afterlife. For many others, there's a journey, and the journey is dark, and the journey asks for allies to help you, you know, get a torch or get a match. And, you know, you got to figure out how you're gonna ask for help down there, and what do you need to bring with you, and what needs to be buried with you so that you can survive this journey. But it was so a part of life. It was like, yeah, you're gonna go to the underworld, and this is kind of the roadmap that we have, and I'm gonna pray for you, and I'm gonna burn incense for you and give you tools and herbs, and, you know, blessed be, you're gonna make it through. And I feel like the dark was just, you know, the other side of life.
Right. Oh, that's so interesting that you say that too. And one of the things that we talked about doing for this episode was exploring kind of how our ancestries viewed death and like some of the death rites that come with them. And one of the things that came up is, as you were talking, is I was looking into like Scandinavian and Norse practices, because that's a big part of my heritage. And I feel like anyone who's listened to the podcast knows that I've talked about Irish culture to the death. So, ooh, pun intended. Do that. But one thing that you're talking about that is reflective of that is, of course, I don't feel like you can talk about like Norse practices without talking about the Vikings, right? And so one of the things that they did, and I think it's kind of what has led to the whole like concept that we think of as a Viking funeral, is like people are sent away on ships and then like people would light those on fire. There's a lot of evidence that shows that that's probably not the way things went down, unfortunately, because that would be an epic way to go out. But one of the things that they did do is they built a lot of burial mounds. And similar to what you're talking about, if it was somebody who was like of higher stature or somebody who deserved a lot of honor, they would be buried in the ship that would take them to the next life. Right. And like, they went on this journey as you're talking about where, and of course it was very reflective of the culture that they lived in their life, where like ships were a huge component of the culture at the time. And they were a traveling culture, but the ship was something that they'd be buried in too, as a way of providing that passage to the next life. And then similar to what you're talking about, they would be given all of the tools that they needed to be able to move through that next chapter. And it's so interesting too, and we're talking about like death and rebirth as being something that could be more fluid, how the cultures of the old saw like it just being the next thing. It's not this finite endpoint, you're done. It's like you move through this next chapter.
Absolutely. And that's what winter is too. Yeah. I mean, nothing's actually dead out there, you know? And when you talk about that rebirth into spring, the springtime is to me the really awkward part of the rebirth. It's painful, you know, it's windy, the weather's all interesting, the time of year is kind of strange, and lots of people die in the spring, and it's this like really interesting portal. And to me, that's that really awkward time of, I'm like slowly coming out of the cocoon, I got to figure out how to, you know, dry these wings off and then figure out how to use them.
And it is one of those seasons that's like iterative. Right? Like you don't really see that any other season. Like you have three springs in a lot of places. So it's interesting to say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the winter is, you know, it is very deathy, but nothing's actually technically dead. And, you know, if you want to use that metaphor too, to souls, you know, how people say, you know, no one's ever really gone, which is a cliche that is not necessarily always helpful to hear when you're grieving,
right?
But in a way, when you think of the grander world and the grander journey of a soul, right, the energy is always just moving on to the next thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm super curious, since I shared a little bit of the death practices in my heritage, is there something from your heritage that maybe aligns with kind of what we've talked about, or is kind of a reflection of a way that people might perceive death from your ancestry and culture?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting that you brought up the Viking funerals, because I also have Swedish and Norse on my side. And, you know, something I learned about the Viking funerals that I didn't know is some of them were very violent.
Yeah. So
they would also bury live people, like widows and slaves and sex workers. They would bury them alive to accompany the, you know, man that died to bring comfort into the next life. And I didn't know that they were so violent.
I know, like that's something, like, not to like talk badly about Vikings, I guess, but like they were a pretty intense culture, right? Like that was kind of the brutality was really what they centered around. So I felt the same way, because as I was kind of doing some research and came across that, I was like, wow, I didn't expect that. But like, at the same time, I'm like, maybe I should have, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I know. I was like, oh, some of my ancestors and I need to have another talk, you know, about some things that weren't right. You know, it's not totally maybe on the same par of what you're talking about, but when I was thinking of the different death rituals in my heritage, there are two that really come to mind that I love in my Persian heritage. There is a specific day that everyone goes to the cemetery. And when you go to the cemetery to visit the dead or honor the ancestors, people hand out usually like dates or like little bits of food. So there's people already in the cemetery who are handing out these treats, and they're for you to eat. They're not for you to leave for your ancestors.
Oh, interesting.
And it's kind of this idea of, I am eating this offering for you in honor of you. And I find it so beautiful because everyone's going on the same day, you know, it's like a whole event, and you carve out time, you know, you carve out time on that day to go to the cemetery and to honor your dead and, you know, to talk and sing to your ancestors. Something else, when you get to the cemetery, if your dead have been buried there, you pour water on their grave is a tradition that we have. And, you know, I wonder if this originates from old Mesopotamian culture.
Mm.
So they believed that the dead needed to not starve. You had to continually give food and drink to your dead, or they were going to haunt you, or they were gonna, you know, cause bad luck for you. And
I'm just getting like this image of like really hangry ghosts.
Exactly.
Which I feel like that's the kind of ghost that I would be for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, same. And so, you know, I don't know if that's exactly where that comes from, but that's what it sparks for me is, you know, you want to give them a little bit of a drink. And, you know, water is also very like clearing and kind of considered to be what, like kind of innocent and
you
know, ethereal. So, those are some of the traditions there that I find really beautiful that they're still in place. You know, people are still doing that.
Yeah. It's this really beautiful, like tending, right? Like a continuity of that I don't think you see a lot in like Western culture anymore. Like even on things like Memorial Day, we have a day designated to it, where it really is more about going out and spending time with those who have passed. You don't really see it like across the board where people are going out and doing that. And, you know, and I think there's a lot of challenges too, of course, with where people are buried and stuff like that. Like if I wanted to go and spend time with a lot of my loved ones that have passed, I'd have to go all the way back to like Montana and stuff like that. But, yeah, I just think there's something really beautiful about being intentional about that, tending to our dead long after they're gone versus just like when a funeral happens and then it's kind of over, right?
Mm-hmm. I think the lack of tending over many, many, many years has contributed to the fear of death.
Yes.
Right. In so many cultures past, it was such a part of daily life. You get up, you tend to the dead, you talk about the dead, you talk about so much preparation for the journey when you die.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't really a mystery for mm-hmm. a lot of cultures. I mean, technically it's still a mystery because no one totally knows what happens, but it wasn't a mystery to them in their beliefs.
Yeah.
They said, this is where you're going and this is how the journey is happening. You know, this is where we get like the Egyptian Book of the Dead. It's like, here's a roadmap. Here's some incantations for specific deities that you will come across at these specific checkpoints.
Yeah.
And so if you spend most of your life preparing for a journey, because you have to remember the things that you're going to need. I mean, yes, you're going to get the book ideally buried with you so that, you know, hopefully you can call upon it when you die, but you're preparing and you're trying to remember and you're doing all this work to get to know who's in the underworld waiting for you and what do you need to do in this life to pass the test. That's a very different way of living.
Totally.
Than we do now, right?
Yeah.
Death is probably less freaky in that way.
Yeah. And it's interesting to think of it almost like how can you not almost think of death as like a sense of adventure almost, you know, like there's almost like an air of, I don't know if excitement's the right word, but like, it's like this, you wouldn't feel as fearful if you had knowledge, of course, but then also like this idea that there's more, right? Or that there is like this lack of taboo, like it's harder to feel fear if there's just more to the story.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Also, people's beliefs directly influence their death fears,
right?
So depending where they think that they're going or they've been told they're going, that's gonna manifest in a whole different way from person to person. You know, I mean, if I'm told I'm going to a fiery hell,
right,
and it's going to be painful, it's going to be very the impact is going to be very different than if I'm told your ancestors are going to be waiting for you with open arms,
right.
You know, your favorite food's going to be there with them and you guys are going to have coffee and tea and, you know, I'm going to have like Persian, you know, delights. That's very right. Different, right?
Totally. And
that will impact someone's journey with their death fears for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, I think the other piece that's really interesting too, is to think about like the practices that have been held onto for so long, like the ones that you're talking about that could potentially have roots in Mesopotamia. Like we're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And there's something really beautiful about the way that those kind of things continue to live on, despite the fact that there's so much history between those two points in time, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, something else I did find with Swedish funerals is that I don't know if they still do this. I want to know, but I don't at this moment. They used to give out candies, and oftentimes the candies were shaped like a coffin or like something kind of like
cute,
like macabre, you know. But I love that. I'm like, I want like deathly shaped candies at my funeral.
Hell
now.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
But there's this way of even a candy shaped like a coffin at a funeral, there's still this beautiful awareness of why you are at the funeral. And if you receive a piece of candy in the shape of a coffin, it reminds you of your own mortality.
Yeah.
Right. And so in all these different ways, in some, you know, throughout so many cultures and throughout so many times in this world, there are all these different ways that people incorporate beautiful rituals to remind us. And I don't, you know, I think that stuff's coming back, but for a long time, it hasn't been here, at least in the US.
Right. Yeah. One of the things that I saw that comes from Swedish culture as well is there's like this concept that I don't know if it's like necessarily like something that is handed down as like, this is something you should do, or if it's almost like this collective consciousness thing. I wasn't like super clear on it, but they called it like death tidying. And it's like when somebody gets that intuitive feeling of like, my death is near, that they would do the organizing that they needed to do around their house, or like, you know, all the things that you don't want to leave to loved ones, right? So like if your house is a wreck, you would take it upon yourself to like clean or organize or make sure that people knew where things were and stuff like that. So it made it easier for that transition. And so again, kind of like what made me think of it is like that awareness piece that you're talking about, and like that preparation piece, and how differently things would maybe go in the United States if we were like more comfortable with, hey, my time is probably ending. Here's all the things that I could do to like be ready for that. And there's just like elements of it, right? But what if we just were so comfortable with it that we're like, nah, I could, you know, I could kick the bucket tomorrow. So like, I just want to make sure my things in the house are organized, or like thinking about kind of some of those different types of preparatory things that you could do to make things easier for that transition and be ready.
Absolutely. Yeah. That practice is kind of making its way over here, where people are being asked, what if you started that process now?
Yeah.
And by doing that process, it sort of automatically makes you start to think of your mortality. If you're coming into your organizing and your cleaning with the idea of, do I want to keep this in my current life? And if I were to die suddenly, you know, who's going to get this? Do I want anyone to have it? If I don't want it and I don't want anyone, you know, it's not really important to pass down, maybe it's time to get rid of it.
Yeah.
You know, I've thought of putting together boxes now of stuff that I know who I want it to go to if by chance I die before family or friends. And then it's already neatly packed up, and that eases my death fear, because that's one of my fears, is that I will die unexpectedly and someone has to come and go through all of my stuff.
Right.
You know, and then I worry, will the people I want to get this and that get it, or will it be easier for the person cleaning just to throw it all away? And
right.
You know, that kind of makes me sad to think about. So yeah.
I think about that with like things like journals and stuff like that, where like, that's one of those things. And I know that there's like family members down the line or whatever that would probably love to read about my life. But like, there's a part of me that's like, there's stuff that I don't want people to ever read. Right. Or like stuff that's like really personal that I'm like, if I were to die tomorrow, they wouldn't know that I don't want them to read my stuff. Right.
So, like, 100%.
It's like those kinds of things to think about too. And I love what you said about it almost being a practice of letting go in this lifetime too, of, does this thing or this object or what I'm holding on to really serve me? And if it doesn't, it's time to let it go. And then no one else has to deal with it. And after I am done too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh my gosh. The journals, when you bring that up, and like, that's also one of my big things, is it is in my end of life planning, burn them. No one needs to read these. Please, these are not for you.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, oh my gosh, I feel like we could go on and on and on forever. And I just find you so fascinating and so wise. And I just love talking about this with you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And it's so beautiful to be in a space where we can have conversations like this and we are comfortable with them. And it's fun to be able to share this kind of a discussion with our coven. And I know it had a big impact when we talked about sacred death in season 3, and it resonated with a lot of people. So thank you so much for being back. And I'm just curious, there's been a lot of changes with Morning Light Divination and some of the offerings that you're able to provide and whatnot. So where can people find you? Also, what kind of offerings are being made available through Morning Light?
Well, I just want to say thank you for having me back. It's such an honor, and it is such an honor that people loved that episode. When you told me that, I was like crying in the kitchen drinking some tea, because it was like, I don't know, it's so cool, you know? So Morning Light is going through some shifts, you know, it's going through its own death and rebirth cycle right now. I'm hoping to offer some death doula services in the near future, as I kind of finish preparing for that. And, you know, people can find me on Instagram, Morning Light Divination. I've got a website, morninglightdivination.com. And definitely hoping to do some more death doula work and kind of changing some things around about like group offerings and classes. You know, I really love to teach, and I'd like to create more spaces for that and more community spaces for people to come together. So definitely more of that coming. And as you know, doing the Patreon thing, which has been cool, and kind of changing up the Holy Coven, and got some new fun things coming. So
yeah. So for those who are on Patreon, I highly recommend subscribing to Morning Light Divination, because Hannah does a weekly divination. And it's become part of like my Monday morning ritual, to listen to that and just be like, what's the kind of the energies for the week? And it's this beautiful kind of culmination of like tarot and astrology and kind of what's going on in the world. And I feel like you're very responsive to what people are going through and like what you're hearing from your clients and how we can kind of utilize some of that energy to kind of collectively come together and support one another. And I think that's really beautiful the way that you're able to do that. Definitely check out the Patreon. And then I think you also have a new cohort of the Tending Descent training coming up, if I'm not mistaken.
I do. You are correct. Yeah. In the fall of 2023 here. So we'll start in October, and then we go till December. So yeah, it'll be a new cohort for 2023, which is exciting. So kind of gearing up for that. And yeah. And thank you so much for what you said about my Patreon. You know, I just
absolutely,
I love to hear it. And I love to hear, you know, any type of feedback is always great. So thank you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Hannah. This has been wonderful. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your winter, and we'll stay warm. We'll use all the space heaters and the cozy blankets and yes. Move through this cycle and start again in the spring. So thank you again for being here. Go shower Hannah with all of the love. She deserves it. She's a beautiful little butterfly in our community. So
thank you so much.
All right. Cheers, witches.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Ouija Boards and Midnight Marks. If you're having a witching good time, we hope you'll help us to grow this little coven. You all know it's us against AI in this algorithm world, so please help us out. Please like, rate, and subscribe anywhere you're listening to us. Also, we want to connect with our spooky marg-loving friends out there, so please like and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Links for those profiles will be in the show notes. And hey, be sure to tell us what you're drinking tonight. We love you all so much, witches. Cheers.